Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. And our next segment is being powered by our friends at Napoli's Pasta and Pizza at 525 South Broadway, right here in Joshua, Texas. Of course, they've got great lunch and dinner specials. My personal favorite is the lobster ravioli, and I also love having that Greek salad. Give them a call at 817-645-5555. Billy and Susan, they will take great care of you. Right now, it is time for us to head to Oklahoma. We are going to talk some Sooner football as they look to get back on track and pick up the pieces after that disappointing 30-13 loss to Notre Dame. This weekend, they are on the road in Ames, Iowa. The Cyclones are a team. They have certainly shown us that they are capable of big wins. I thought they played Kansas State extremely well and, of course, picked up a win over TCU. It is always a pleasure when we can welcome in from the sports animal in Oklahoma City, Bob Berry Jr., who I have to wonder is reeling a bit after his Oklahoma City Thunder traded the reigning sixth man of the year in James Harden to the Houston Rockets. And, you know, we just celebrated Halloween a couple of days ago, Bobby. Those kids were probably in a panic figuring out, you know, the man with the beard. What's up with that? They got to switch colors.
That's right. There were a lot of people shaving in Oklahoma City in the last week or so, and I never could grow a beard anyway, either, you know, whatever. But after James Harden's debut with the Houston Rockets, you know, the Thunder opens their regular season against San Antonio, and if they lose that game, I'm sure we'll be hearing from a lot of Thunder fans saying, see what you gave up? The guy just had 37 points, three off his career high in his first game as a Rocket. Incredible.
Well, you are right, because his stat line was just fascinating. 37 points, 12 assists, and money does talk. $80 million. I mean, you talk about a guy having a spring in his step and a little bit more moxie. How stunning of a move was this? Because I know in the press boxes down here, it was quite a story.
It was, too. It was actually in the fourth quarter of the Notre Dame-Oklahoma football game when we first heard about it, and obviously it sent all of us Oklahoma media types scrambling to get to our phones and call our respective media outlets to report the news. But I think just the timing more than anything, Alyssa, I don't think that too many people are shocked that James Harden was dealt, because it was going to be difficult to re-sign him. Everybody had admitted to that based on the numbers and how Oklahoma City really doesn't want to pay a huge luxury tax being in the market size that we're in. So that part didn't surprise me. But if you think about it, had they have gone past last night, actually, Halloween, it would have been, the signing period would have been over, and James Harden would have played this year, and then they would have had to renegotiate with him at the end of this year. So a lot of people felt like, well, they just sped up the obvious. They were probably only going to have him for 1 year, if that, as a restricted free agent, and then he would go to the highest bidder after this particular season. So I think, all in all, when you look at it, we see guys come and go all the time, and professional sports don't necessarily like it, but it happens all the time. And in this case, the Thunder made out about as well as they could in terms of what they got in exchange for the beard.
Bobby, you're on air live every single day on the Sports Animal right there in Oklahoma City, and also on television on KFOR. What kind of feedback are you getting for the Thunder fans? You were talking about how tough it is in professional sports. It's been a crash course for the Thunder fans. And, you know, I just think about just a couple of years ago when they traded Jeff Green, and he was so beloved by the Thunder. So it is difficult when these things go down, and it's a shock to the system.
Well, it is, especially when you're new to the game. And Oklahoma City's still a very new NBA market, so they do have that Jeff Green experience to lean on. Of course, that's what that particular deal is what brought Kendrick Perkins to town. And I remember Perk, you know, wept openly in front of his Celtics teammates when he left them after 8 years, having gone to play for them straight from high school. So it was a shock to his system as well when he came to Oklahoma City. And the same thing happened that happened to Harden in Houston. Kendrick was in the city about a week, as I recall, or two or whatever, and all of a sudden he had signed a lucrative contract extension, which is still in effect. So I think the interesting thing to me is Kevin Durant's reaction, because admittedly, when Jeff Green was here, that was Kevin Durant's closest member friend on the team.
Because correct.
They had been youngsters, you know, in Seattle with the Supersonics, you know, coming out of college and then making the franchise move to Oklahoma City, and then he got dealt. And I remember how stunned Durant was at the time there. Well, James Harden was his best friend on the current Thunder team. By all those who've been around him. And so now he's been dealt to Houston, and yet KD came out the other day and was the first one to say, hey, it's how it goes. And he just, you can just tell Kevin Durant is maturing in so many ways, being 24 now and being receiving all the national attention he's received the last 3 years, that he handled it a lot easier the other day than he did the Jeff Green move a few years ago, and that's probably going to set the tone for the team. Kevin just said, hey, he's always going to be a friend. He's been a friend. He'll continue to be a friend, but right now we got to move on, and we're excited about the new guys we got from the Rockets.
Bobby, we have strong listenership, a lot of Dallas Maverick fans that tune in, and so they're always wondering, you know, how will the matchup, how does this change the Thunder within the organization, the Harden trade? Because many of the folks find that it is stunning that Sam Presti would not have bent over backwards to try to keep this group together and losing a special kind of teammate, as you're talking about, this brotherhood between KD and James Harden.
Well, I don't know. You know, that remains to be seen. I think Scott Brooks is going to be the one challenged as much as anybody with kind of new and different personnel groupings, bringing in Kevin Martin, the traditional scorer for the Rockets. He's not a James Harden. He's a better scorer than James, but he doesn't do the other things that Harden does, admittedly. And then Jeremy Lamb, the rookie from Connecticut, you know, I don't think he's going to get many minutes this year anyway because the Thunder's still really good, and it's hard for a rookie to find minutes on that team. Eric Maynor is back, and I know you remember him.
Solid
backup point guard to Russell Westbrook a couple years ago before he tore up his knee last season, so you got to get Eric Maynor back into the fold and get him going again. And then they signed Hashim Thabeet in the offseason, the 7'3", former college star at Connecticut that was the number 2 overall pick by Memphis a few years ago. And, you know, everybody's been calling him a bust in his first 4 NBA seasons, and yet Sam Presti lost him a lot. And Thabeet is going to back up Kendrick Perkins at center. So where's he going to fit in? What kind of minutes is he going to get? So it'll be a different deal all the way around for the Thunder, and it'll be kind of interesting to see how Scott Brooks, you know, if he's able to find that chemistry. However, having said that, they still have their core four, is what we're calling them, with Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Kendrick Perkins, and Serge Ibaka. And Ibaka signed a long-term extension in the preseason, giving him $14.5 million a year, and he's improved dramatically since a year ago. So they have all those four guys back, plus Thabo Sefolosha. So basically, they're starting five from a year ago and from 2 years ago, where they've gone to the Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals in consecutive years. So it's a pretty good nucleus. It's still a very good basketball team. We'll just see if they have any of these early season bumps in the road as they try and figure out rotation.
Serge Ibaka, touch on him a little bit, because as I understand, he's increased his shooting range. I mean, is he shooting threes?
Well, he's telling everybody he is. You know,
okay.
And I don't think that's part of the plan. I don't think they prefer him to do that. They'd like him to stay inside and swat every shot away that the league presents him. But he definitely improved a lot physically in the preseason. Remember, he was foul-prone in his first couple of years. He'd go up and block shots, sure, but he'd also commit some silly fouls sometimes. He's become a lot more mature in the way that he blocks shots and the way he's able to position his body to not draw as many fouls. So he's gotten markedly better. I think the Olympic experience, playing for the Spanish Olympic team, helped him a lot. Being around the Gasol brothers, Pau and Mark, in the Olympics on that team that lost the United States in the gold medal game, I think that helped Surge a lot. And the Thunder actually had 4 players in the Olympics, you know, Harden, Westbrook, and Durant for the USA, and Ibaka for Spain. So those guys gained a lot of experience. Surge benefited the most. And again, you talk about that extra motivation James Harden has. Hey, when Surge signed the new deal for $14 million a year, all of a sudden he came to practice a little peppier and playing with a little more intensity, and that seemed to have paid off.
That experience certainly does pay off for Serge Ibaka, because I would anticipate he's going to be a better on-ball defender. Talk a little bit about, as far as Bobby, the Western Conference. And, you know, of course, Kevin McHale, he's got to be pumped, who's in his backcourt now with Jeremy Lin and James Harden. You talk about a 1-2 punch.
That is true. I'm still trying, the jury's still out with me on Jeremy Lin. I mean, I think it's a wonderful story that basically he got paid $28 million by the Rockets for 26 games of an audition with the Knicks a year ago. And I mean, I still think Houston woefully overpaid for him, but we'll see. Maybe it'll work out. Maybe, you know, obviously he and James Harden seem to have clicked in their debut game against the Pistons. Obviously the Lakers aren't all that just yet, you know. I mean,
Kobe, how about those Dallas Mavericks?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dallas with all those new faces, I had to get my flip card out watching the Mavericks the other night. I hadn't forgotten that O.J. Mayo was there. And I thought, Darren Collison, what's he doing there? And there's Kamen sitting over there on the bench. But I tell you what, Rick Carlisle is a hell of a coach, as you know. He did a great job in that game. And then I loved it with, speaking of the Mavericks, former Dallas assistant Terry Stotts, the former Oklahoma Sooner himself,
yes,
taking over in Portland now as the head coach, and the Trailblazers put it on the Lakers last night. I loved seeing that. So L.A.'s 0-2. Steve Nash limps off with a shin injury. Kobe's grumpy, had 7 turnovers, you know, coughed up the ball several times out of bounds. I love seeing all the discord the Lakers are going through. So that is happening now. I still think the Thunder and San Antonio, you know, it could very well be a Western Conference Finals rematch of what it was a year ago, as far as I'm concerned. Because look at Duncan and Parker. All they do is do the same thing. I thought the Hornets had them in their game, and then sure enough, here comes Tim Duncan with 24 points and 11 rebounds, and Tony Parker has, you know, 23 points, and they go win. And that's a tough place to play. So the Spurs are the Spurs. The Thunder are really good still, and I think they're still the two best teams in the West.
Always playing with a level of consistency. Our good friend Bob Berry Jr. from the Sports Animal in Oklahoma City is on air with us right now. We're talking some NBA. We are going to quickly shift avenues. Let's zero in on our Oklahoma Sooners, Bobby, because two losses on the year against K-State and Notre Dame. Do they still have a shot at a national title? I mean, or perhaps am I being too optimistic on my part?
Being way too optimistic, fellow Sooner. It's over. That part's done. Notre Dame ended all of that last week. And I tell you what, though, E, I came away a lot more impressed with Notre Dame than I was depressed by Oklahoma. I thought the Sooners, you know, committed some costly mistakes. They were rolling down the field on their first possession and then had a terrible snap that cost them a 19-yard loss and basically ruined that drive. And then they moved it down the field on the second possession and got a field goal out of it. But Notre Dame defensively was so good. I hadn't seen the Irish in person all year. I'd seen only a few highlights. Everybody had told me about Manti Te'o, the linebacker. He was the best player on the field the other night in Norman. He was all over the place. He had 8 tackles in the first quarter, finished with 11, had that great interception late in the game. And I just think Notre Dame slugged OU in the mouth. They were way more physical up front on both sides of the line, and that was telling. Everett Golson had a great game. You know, I hadn't seen him play quarterback. I was on the elevator with several Notre Dame coaches after the game. I said, boy, number 5 impressed me. And they said, which one? Because Te'o and Golson both wear 5. And I said, okay, you're right, both of them. But I said, I like the quarterback. And they go, that's by far his best game of the year. They were saying that he'd been very inconsistent. They were kind of frustrated by that. He had had a head injury that kept him out of the BYU game the week before. And he was brilliant against OU, I thought, with both his feet and his arms. So they're really good. And there's no reason why they shouldn't be 11-0 going to USC and trying to close out a 12-0 regular season. If that's the case, I think they're going to play for a national title. But having said that, I think Oklahoma fought it. They grinded through a tough night when not much was happening, and then they tie it at 13 with 9 minutes to go. What else can you want? And then they just, for the second straight time at home against a really good team, they folded in the fourth quarter, especially defensively. They couldn't get off the field. The same thing happened in the Kansas State loss. So for the first time in the Bob Stoops era, they lose 2 home games in one season, and yet OU's also 19-0 all-time under Stoops, coming off a loss. So I think they're going to clock Iowa State Saturday in Ames. They'll have 4 games left after that, and they still have a chance to go 10-2, get into a BCS bowl game, I think, is a possibility. But I think national title is gone, and I really think Big 12 title is gone, unless somebody, you know, this might be one of those rare occasions where Oklahoma's rooting for their arch-rival Oklahoma State this weekend to knock off Kansas State and have somebody beat the Cats, so that can bring everybody else back into contention for the Big 12.
Let me back up just a moment. I have to ask you, as far as, I obviously wasn't at that game with Notre Dame, what was the atmosphere like in Norman? Because it had to have been off the chart. I mean, was it like going back to the 2000 Nebraska game? I mean, what would you compare it to, Bobby?
Fabulous. I'm way older than you, as you know, and I was at the Oklahoma-Notre Dame game the last time that Notre Dame played in Norman, which happened to have been 46 years ago, 1966.
Oh,
and I remember it well that day, how everybody was excited that the Irish were in town, and that was the year Notre Dame tied Michigan State in that classic game under Eric Parsegian for the national title. But it was electric. It was a record crowd, 86,031. Notre Dame was extremely well represented. That was the most fans, Elissa, that I've ever seen. Now, whether they were all Notre Dame fans or Oklahoma fans wearing Notre Dame gear, who knows? But it was the most fans for an opposing team I've ever seen at an OU home game under Bob Stoops. Some people challenged me on the radio this week and said, well, Alabama brought a lot of fans in 2003 or 2002, whenever that was, when they played in Norman, and they did. But I was at that game as well, and there were far more Notre Dame fans at this one. Because think about it, Notre Dame hasn't been relevant in 20 years.
True.
Drew Holtz was there. I mean, and these people, you know, people talk about the frustration of Oklahoma not contending for a national title in 4 years. What's wrong? They haven't won a national title in 12 years. What's wrong? Well, Notre Dame hadn't done anything in 20 years, and so for them to be 8-0 and have the national following they have, the Irish fans were everywhere the other day, and it was an electric atmosphere. It was a really fun part, a game to be a part of.
Bob just mentioned, of course, the Sooners headed to Ames, Iowa, to face the Cyclones. What is your biggest concern, so many games into the season, with Oklahoma? What's the one area that they really need to zero in on?
Oh, I would say going into this game, maybe just the run game, because Damian Williams, they're back. JUCO guy from Arizona who's kind of emerged here lately, They really had no running game at the start of the year, and then Williams started breaking off long runs, including that 95-yarder against Texas at the Cotton Bowl. He kind of became the guy, but he got banged up twice in the Notre Dame game, early in the game and then late, and there's a chance he might not play in Ames. If he doesn't, they'll have to go back to Dominic Whaley, who was a starter a year ago, a former walk-on who tore up his knee a season ago and is still kind of on the mend. So that would probably be it, just run game. I really don't think they'll have a letdown. They're kind of they realize that national title hopes are gone. But, again, they have, you know, five games left starting this weekend. So it's like half a season to go. And I think they've got the leadership this year that they didn't have last year to get them through some of these tight spots. And but, you know, Iowa State's good. I think Paul Rhodes is a fabulous coach. I really do. I mean, if I were an AD, I would have him on my little index card in my front pocket if I had a job opening, because that guy meets every criteria there is for a great coach and the job he's doing in Ames. So it will be tough. I've been to Ames many times when OU was the heavy favorite and they struggled just to get a win. Even in the Sam Bradford era, they led 7-0 at halftime one year and barely won 17-7 and got out of there by the skin on their teeth. So I think Oklahoma will win. I don't think it matters what the score is. And then after that, they have a chance to win out based on what's on their schedule. That would put them at 10-2. You know, like I said, with a chance to get an at-large berth into a BCS game.
Well, and Iowa State, as you were talking about, how about that bounce-back victory last weekend over Baylor? I mean, they're a team you can't overlook.
No, they're not, but yet Baylor, God, they're so bad defensively. I mean, the Big 12 really has some of the worst defenses maybe in the history of college football, starting with West Virginia, and our friends in Austin are pathetic defensively as well. But so that was a big win for Iowa State. Really didn't surprise me that much, but if you want to go by history, Oklahoma has not lost in Ames in 50 years, since 1962. They've won 20 in a row up there. So
wow.
I think it'll be 21 straight, but I just don't think anything will be easy on Saturday because of the way the Cyclones play. Now, Iowa State suffered a huge loss. Jake Knott is their outstanding linebacker candidate for Defensive Player of the Year, and he's hurt, has a shoulder injury. I don't think he's going to be back until a bowl game, so he'll definitely miss the game.
Okay, my final question for you, Oklahoma State, how do you see things shaking out between them and K-State this weekend?
Well, it's a real opportunity. A year ago, speaking of Iowa State, OSU was the team that had reached number two in the country, and they went to Ames, and we know what happened. They lost that game.
That's right.
They dream of playing for a national title. In all fairness, I still think it should be mentioned that, you know, that was the day of the Oklahoma State women's basketball plane crash. That the Oklahoma State football players had to endure that morning. It was a morning filled with grief, and yet they went out in that football game that night, took a 24-7 lead, and then just couldn't hold it, and Iowa State won in overtime. So now Kansas State is the team that's ascended to number two nationally behind Alabama in the BCS poll, and OSU has a chance to knock off number two. I think they have a puncher's chance, Alyssa, no more than that. I mean, they're playing much better on defense. But true freshman Wes Lunn at quarterback is back, but he really hasn't played much at all. He played a game and a half, you know, before he hurt his ankle and his knee, and then he came back last week for his first game back since that injury. I think K-State will harass him quite a bit, although he was really good early in the season at Arizona against a pretty good defensive amount of pressure. So Lunn will be challenged, but then there's Colin Klein. They just don't make mistakes. And Bill Snyder, for my money, he might be the greatest coach in the history of college football. I mean,
he's got my vote for Coach of the Year.
I'm telling you. I mean, how can you, you know, they ought to call it the Bill Snyder Coach of the Year Award. I don't care who gets it. I mean,
it's incredible.
He turned it around once before. Now he's about to do it again. And one of the local sports writers here, Barry Trammell from the Oklahoma, said, maybe we'll name Bill Snyder the Coach of the Millennium twice. How about that? I don't see them losing. I don't see him turning it over. I don't see him making mistakes. I just think they'll win, and it doesn't matter really by how much. They'll just roll on, and I'm rooting for him because of the way he's run his program. Half of Oklahoma's coaching staff was on staff with Coach Snyder at Kansas State back in the day. He's turned out a lot of great coaches. He does it the right way, in my opinion. So if the state schools around here are going to lose to Kansas State, then go represent the Big 12 and go get in that national title game and knock off Saban and Alabama. That would be great with me.
It has been tremendous. Bob Berry Jr. has been with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show, talking NBA and, of course, Big 12 football. And I know you're playing a little bit hurt. I hope you're progressing and feeling a whole lot better, Bobby.
Thank you, E. Always a pleasure.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment. Hi, folks. Elissa Walker-Campbell here to tell you about our good friends at Mercer Well Service, who pride themselves on integrity, leadership, and complete customer satisfaction in the oil and gas industry. They truly understand what it takes to be successful. In fact, they've been providing outstanding completion and workover rig services for over 50 years. One of the key components and reasons that they have been able to have such longevity is their exceptional staff and experienced personnel to assist you 24 hours, 7 days a week. Mercer Well Service also provides a full line of completion and workover rig services that include 158 rigs and have 25 swab units. Did you know that Mercer Well Service yard locations include Cleburne, Jacksboro, Kilgore, Whitesboro, and Sweetwater, Texas, among many others? And they are equipped with mud pumps, mud tanks, hydraulic catwalks, pipe racks, and rig supervisors. Why not give them a call today at 940-668-5147. Mercer Well Service. Call them at 940-668-5147.
Elissa Walker-Campbell is on the air.
Asking the questions you want to know.
With sports biggest and best names. Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle.
And one of the ways you get high percentage threes is to get offensive rebounds and toss them back out. And if we don't get those rebounds, they're going to get them and toss them back out.
Now, rebounding is a massively important stat.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Here we go. The start of the NBA season is just around the corner, and for the Dallas Mavericks, they've had a high amount of turnover with their roster in the offseason. 8 new players, 3 which are rookies, but the good news is that one of those players filling the point guard position is former UCLA standout that led the Bruins to the Final Four 3 times, and he is entering in his 4th season in the NBA. Of course, we are talking about the young man. Hey, he's got a million-dollar smile. The point guard for the Dallas Mavericks, Darren Collison. And I thought, you know, what better way to find out more about Darren than we're going to visit with his former college coach, Ben Howland at UCLA. Coach, thank you so much for the time. I know it's a busy time of year. We appreciate you joining us.
Alyssa, it's great to be with you. I'm excited to talk about Darren. He's one of my all-time favorite players and just did a great job during his 4 years at UCLA, and as you mentioned, he helped lead us to 3 straight Final Fours and was the integral part of all 3 of those teams. Just really proud of how he's conducted himself both on and off the floor as he's gone on to the NBA and really established himself as one of the very good point guards in the league.
And Coach Howland, what has made him so effective as he's taken his game to the next level in that point guard position? Because we've seen so much and we've heard so much about his athleticism. He's got that tremendous energy. I think watching him on game tape, he plays with his eyes wide open. He sees the floor extremely well. But also, what about that intangible? He's a coachable guy, isn't he?
He really is. You know, Darren is a very good shooter, number one. He really is an outstanding shooter. I think he's one of the top 2 free throw shooters in the history of UCLA basketball, but was a great 3-point shooter. He shot it really well in the NBA. You know, when he got his chance after Chris Paul got hurt during his rookie campaign and down in New Orleans, you know, for 2 months there during the season, he was one of the top players in the NBA, both in assists and points as a point guard. And, you know, so he can really, really pass the ball. He's a very good score player, and he's an outstanding defender. He can really pressure the ball. The thing I love about Darren is he's just so dedicated, so committed. He loves the game. Basketball is his life. You know, he got married summer before last, has a beautiful wife, just very focused on career and family. He loves being a Dallas Maverick, too. I talked to him not too long ago, and one of his favorite things is Coach, I have a card that gets me into the gym whenever I want, so if I want to go shoot at 2 in the morning, I can go there and shoot 2 in the morning. It's never a problem to get in the gym. This guy lives in the gym. He really loves the way that you know, Mark Cuban runs the organization. The players are treated with such first-class care. You know, everything that everybody knows in the basketball world about the Dallas Mavericks, it's run as well as any organization in all professional sport. And it's really, really an honor and a privilege from Darren's standpoint to be there representing and playing for the Dallas Mavericks.
Well, Coach Allen, I must share that Darren Collison certainly made quite an impression with Coach Carlisle and his staff, because when he signed with Dallas, he picked up the phone, he immediately requested game tape and ISOs on each of the players with Dallas just to have that familiarity, and he wants to know where their sweet spots are on the floor so he can get the ball up the floor and get it in their hands. I mean, you talk about a guy taking initiative.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I mean, he's getting to play with one of the great players in the history of the game, and Nowitzki, who can give him the ball anywhere, he's going to score it. So, I mean, he's very fortunate. I think O.J. Mayo's a great addition to their team. Obviously, Marion's back, and he's still one of the great defenders and athletes in the game. It's going to be an exciting year for the Mavericks, and I know Darren is thrilled to be there and to have this opportunity to play for the Mavericks, and I hope it turns out to be something that will be long-term.
Well, Ben, you talk about Darren Collison. He obviously has a very special place in your heart, but you've also got to feel good about your former player, that he has the opportunity to play for one of the best coaches in the game and a guy that's won a world championship not only as a coach but also as a player. So he's going to be able to maximize Darren's strengths and minimize his weaknesses.
Now, Coach Carlisle is definitely one of the best coaches in the NBA. You know, when they won the championship 2 years ago, that was just a masterful job that he did during the season. You know, they lost some guys last year to free agency, and I know they're in a rebuilding mode right now. And I know that Mark Cuban knows how lucky he is to have Rick leading his organization as the coach. And he's both ends. He's a great offensive coach and really, really has a great feel for that end of the floor. And he's also an outstanding defensive coach and relates well with the players. He's a player's coach. So Darren's very fortunate to be playing for Coach Carlisle, and I know he's excited about that. And he loves to play. Darren just wants to be out on the floor and wants to compete and wants to he brings it every day, everything he's got. And as a coach, that's all you want from your players.
Well, I think, too, that he'll be able to make that transition because, you know, Coach Carlisle's system is based on efficient play and simplicity, and he's going to be able to read and react to what the defense has given him.
No question. And, you know, they run a lot of great stuff. And, you know, when you have a guy like Nowitzki to play with, it really takes a lot of pressure off a lot of the other players because he's so dangerous.
Ben Howland is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And I have to mention, you know, New Orleans had drafted Darren Collison back in 2009, and he had the opportunity to learn from one of the best point guards in all of the NBA, and that, of course, is Chris Paul. And he learned how to, you know, to manage the game, to control himself within the game. Can you expound a little bit on that?
Yeah, well, obviously, Chris is one of the great players in the NBA currently and a part of the USA basketball team that won the gold medal this summer. We get a chance to see him every night here in L.A. with the Clippers, and you know, he's really special. And I think Darren, though, is really a student of the game, and you know, he's going to do whatever Coach Carlisle asks. So one thing that Darren does, as well as anybody in that league, is at the other end of the game, you know, on defense, he's so good at pressuring the ball. When you go back and look at what they did in the playoffs, Indiana, this past year, he did a great job pressuring the ball and getting after people defensively and, you know, creating havoc with his ability to, you know, really, really pressure and anticipate. So I think that's going to be a real big plus for the Mavericks, is to have a point guard who can really cause havoc with the other team's point guard by pressuring him and trying to take him out of his game.
Yes, he's a tremendous defensive player, but what would you say to him as a player when you're coming into a system with so many new faces and you're trying to build that cohesiveness and that chemistry? He's got to get to know those teammates, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, and that's going to take a little time, and I think that I'm sure the coaching staff, you know, they all understand that. They've got a very new group, and yeah, I'm sure it's very exciting at the same time. You know, should be a lot of fun. You know, the bottom line is he just has to, you know, do whatever Coach Carlisle tells him to do, and, you know, that's all he really needs to do, just trust and then what Coach Carlisle is telling him to do and try to execute that the best of his ability, and everything else will take care of itself.
Ben Howland is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We know him well, UCLA's men's basketball coach, and we are shining the spotlight on Darren Collison, who was just an outstanding point guard for him there. And what is it about UCLA? You guys just continue to, you know, bring so many terrific players to the NBA level. You've got 15 right now that are playing in the NBA. And of course, we think of Russell Westbrook with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Kevin Love. The list goes on and on.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate. I've been very fortunate to coach a lot of great players here at UCLA. And this is one of the great traditional programs in the history of college basketball at UCLA that's had the most pros, actually, in the history of the NBA from one school. And, we've been very fortunate to have great kids, and we're excited about all the players in the NBA from UCLA, and we're excited about the upcoming season. We're actually playing Rick Barnes and his outstanding program.
Oh, yeah.
In a game down in Houston this coming
December.
Season in December, and that'll be a real challenge for us. He's got a very good team. With a lot of really good young players, and we're very young. We're a team that has four freshmen that are all expected to play considerable minutes, so that should be exciting for us as we move forward.
You guys had a terrific summer together as well, as I understand. You went to China, is that right?
Yeah, it was a great experience. We took our team to China, and we were over there for a week. We played three games. We played against Yao Ming's professional team the last game, the Shanghai Sharks.
Oh, yeah.
Meet Yao Ming, who's just a great guy, and that was a great experience. But the cultural experience of taking our team to Beijing and Shanghai and to see a different culture and to experience the way that the Chinese live, and which is such a huge economic power now in this global economy, was really a great experience for our players, and they really loved it. They were talking about it for the last month after we returned back. We went to late August and got back the 29th of August, so less than 5 weeks ago. It was really, really a good experience.
Coach Howland, many thanks for dropping by. We certainly enjoyed hearing about Darren Collison, and good luck this season.
Thank you very much.